2015. We're going to go a little out of order to accommodate some good representatives. We're going to open a hearing on House Bill 3031. Rep. Fagan, would you like to come forward?
It's actually only six, but that's okay.
You want me to describe the bill?
Yes, would you please describe what's going on? Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair?
Just a second. Let me open up the Business and Transportation Committee. It is May 6th, 2015, and we are going to open up a hearing on House Bill 3031. Please give us a summary of the bill.
Mr. Vice Chair, House Bill 3031 requires that caller using automatic dialing and announcing device must provide, within first 10 seconds, method versus subscriber being called to notify caller via a single signal or code that subscriber does not wish to receive future calls. Requires caller using automatic dialing and announcing device to exclude from call list subscribers who notified caller or wish not to receive future calls. Allows prosecuting attorney to require a person believed to have information about unlawful robocalls to testify and provide evidence as part of the investigation. Applies to call made on or after January 1st, 2016, declares emergency effective on passage. There is no revenue impact and has a minimal fiscal impact. We also have a -A8 amendment, creates exemptions for collections agency or debt collector and public safety or law enforcement representative. There is no revenue impact and there's a minimal fiscal impact with that -A8 amendment.
Yeah, thank you, James. Rep. Fagan, please.
Vice Chair Gerard, members of the committee, for the record, Shamia Fagan, State Representative for House District 51. Thank you for that summary, and I would also add that the bill was heard in the House Consumer Protection Committee without any opposition, passed out of that committee unanimously, also passed off the House floor unanimously. So this is a bill that was prompted by an email I received from a constituent last October. It was October 9th of 2014. I'll just read a portion of the email. It said, in the past 24 hours, I've received 10 phone calls from the same number on my home office line. I received a similar number of calls from the same number on my home landline. You can imagine how disruptive and enraging this is. The survey is asking about our intention in regard to the upcoming election. The survey has no means of talking to a real person or opting out of this or future calls. It just constantly calls back, regardless of whether or not you answer the previous call. I normally participate in surveys, but this has become ridiculous and I consider harassment. So after I got that email, we put kind of a image of a robot on the phone on our Facebook page just to say, hey, look, this is not us, you know, sorry that this is happening, and received a number of other people from the community piping up and saying that they'd received a similar calls. Just a couple of those comments were, the robot is driving our home crazy, calling multiple times a day, no way to get off the call. Another person said, robocalls are an efficient way of using the phone service I pay for to annoy and harass me. And they went on. So I made it a goal when I got reelected to introduce legislation to try and reduce the possibility of that type of call happening again. So that is House Bill 3031A that is before you today. And the bill is simple. What it simply requires is that it, for an automated call like I've just described, within the first 10 seconds of the phone call, there has to be a single push button or spoken number. So for example, push 2 or state or say 2 to be able to opt out of that call and to opt out of future calls. So it really is that simple. Happy to take any questions.
I actually have one. Did you look into First Amendment rights with campaigns? We've run into that problem before. This is not a new idea. It's just that we've run into problems with First Amendment rights.
Chair Gerard, thank you. Yes, in fact, two things make us believe that this is steers clear of a First Amendment violation. First, it's not actually aimed at political speech, so it's any kind of speech that would fall under this. There's no specific target towards political speech. But the second one is that Legislative Council, the original version, is we actually required the robocall to identify the source of the call, and it was Legislative Council that said this would be, that would be compelled speech and encouraged us to take that portion out. But then the portion that's in there going forward, they didn't see any concerns with that.
Do you have problems with the -A8s?
I do not. In fact, the only reason we're not attempting to move the A8 today is that we are also working with, again, we're working with a couple of industries that use automated calls that are already otherwise regulated to try and not, you know, kind of double regulate them through this. So I'm working with Elise Brown with AT&T and then Matt Marquis with the debt collectors. And so the A8 is going to be encompassed in a dash 9 that will – there's a dash 7 that was not adopted on the House side, but that, that will – the former dash 7 and the A8 will all be encompassed in a dash 9 to move the bill.
Do you have any more – any other questions for the good representative? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else wish to talk on House Bill 3031? I'm okay to close this, aren't I? Mm-hmm. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3031, and we're going to open a hearing on House Bill 2567. James, lead us on this one, please.
Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, House Bill 2567 allows the distillery licensee to buy bulk distilled liquor from and sell to another distillery license for purpose of blending and manufacturing. Allows the distillery licensee to pour tastings of products approved by sale by Oregon Liquor Control Commission and manufacture in Oregon by distillery licensee or another distillery licensee. Allows more than one distillery licensee to use same premises at same time for conducting tastings. Deletes requirement that liquor for tastings be purchased from the OLCC. Allows retail outlet agent to sell only liquor manufactured in Oregon and approved for sale by OLCC. Allows retail outlet agent to sell at retail liquor manufactured by another distillery or retail outlet agent. Expands activities allowed under special events distillery license for tasting, sales by the glass, or bottle sales or liquor manufactured in Oregon. Expands where special events can be held to include the distillery. Declares emergency effective upon passage. We also have a dash A3 amendment. It removes proposed provision allowing distillery licensee at special event to pour tastings of products of another distiller. Eliminates proposed provision allowing OLCC to license more than one distillery license to hold joint special event. Removes proposed provision allowing distillery licensee to hold joint tastings with other distillery licensees. Removes proposed provision allowing distillery license to sell at retail products of another distillery retail outlet agent. And removes proposed provision allowing distillery retail outlet agent at special event to sell liquor manufactured by another, and we are still awaiting the fiscal and revenue statements on that dash A3 amendment.
Okay, I'm going to bring three people up all at once. I'm going to bring Paul Romain, Patrick Bernards, and Rebecca Ball, please. Mr. Romain, why don't you start us off? Or do you want, do you, does somebody else want to start?
I'll just go down there.
Go ahead and start.
Okay. Vice Chair Gerard, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Ball, and I'm here to testify on behalf of House Bill 2567 on behalf of the Oregon Distillers Guild. This is a modernization bill that will help Oregon distilleries to responsibly showcase their products. I'm going to let Patrick go into the details because it sounded more complicated than it probably is. I did want to flag for the committee that it's this bill passed out of the House unanimously. However, it has come to our attention that there is some language in the bill that needs to be further clarified so the bill does what it is intended to do. We are going to work with the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association and other stakeholders to get that clarified in language. But I'll turn it over to Patrick.
Okay, Patrick.
Vice Chair Gerard and members of the committee, again, as Rebecca just mentioned, this bill, as I even read it for the millionth time, is very confusing to read through sometimes. So I'm going to give you in my layman's terms what our intent is from the Oregon Distillers Guild. And there's really four main pieces to this bill. One is, again, the sale of the bulk spirits between distilleries. Currently, today, our facility or any of my peers' facilities in the state of Oregon, we can go to Idaho or Indiana or Kentucky or New Jersey, and we can buy bulk spirits to bring back into the state to rectify them, to finish them, to whatever that equates to. But I can't go down the street and buy it from my own peers, keeping the money in the state, which seems to us to make a heck of a lot more sense. And so that's one piece of the bill. The other piece was to be able to use our tasting room. So these are tasting rooms licensed by the OLCC for the purpose of allowing consumers to come in, pouring them samples, allowing them to buy bottles of the spirits that we produce. My store in particular is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon to 6. Other stores are open at other times at those distilleries. When that store closes at 6 o'clock, I currently am not able to use my store for any other purpose. I would really like to be able to use my store to hold educational classes, cocktail classes, things that will help me as a small business to make additional money. And I can tell you over the last 5 years, we've been asked countless times to be able to do those things, and I have to keep saying no. And so that's that piece of the bill. Allow us to use our tasting rooms, again, after hours. And that, by the way, would be under an SED, a special event distillery license. So we would have to notify the OLCC, have their approval, have the requisite food items served along with the alcohol to be compliant. And so that's another step required to have that privilege. The third piece is to be able to make a cocktail out of our products, or using our products and other distilled spirits. And I'll give you the example of today, what we're able to do is make a cocktail with our distilled spirits and any other non-alcoholic beverages.
Can I interrupt you for
yes,
a second?
Please.
Could you please give me your name?
I'm sorry. Patrick Bernards from Bull Run Distilling Company.
Great, thanks.
And so I can make, you know, all sorts of drinks with other non-alcoholic beverages, but some of the most enjoyed cocktails on this planet include things like Manhattans and martinis and Sazeracs, and the list goes on. By current definition, I can't make any of those products, which means I can't really showcase our products in their best light. So again, with an SED, a special event distillery license, we want to be able to make these other cocktails using, by the way, items that are produced in the state of Oregon. Again, that's good for my peers. It's good for the Oregon liquor stores because that's where we'll be buying those things if we're allowed to do this. And the fourth piece, and I'm not going to steal Paul's thunder, certainly, is where I think we have our biggest sticking point. And again, it's one of those unintended consequences as we wrote this initially. And that is, we wanted to be able to say, get an SED to go hold an event. And let's say three of our peers want to get together and go to Ashland to hold a whiskey tasting. Well, it's quite expensive for all three of us to get an employee to drive down to Ashland to pay the money to be there. Whereas if I could get together with my other two peers and say, you know what, let's hire one employee and allow them to go down, pour all of our products and sell all of our products. And today's reporting POS systems allow us to split those sales back out so I can give, we can all give the OLCC the exact reporting that they need in accounting. And again, I think the concern was the way that the current bill is written, there could be some pretty large unintended consequences. And we do want to work with the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association, the folks from ALSO, and include the OLCC to help oversee some of what we want to do to make sure it's going to fit with them, to come up with something that we can all live with. And I think we'll get there.
Yep. Thank you. Mr. Romaine?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm with the Romaine Group, lawyers in Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We also have members that are representatives of distilled spirits. That's our interest in the bill. Again, this when we reviewed what came out of the House, it caused us a bit of concern because it's not because of anything that the distillers have said. It was, again, the unintended, we've now found out, consequences of what was actually written, where you could make an argument that you could have a one distiller, in effect, go to one place, sell every Oregon product under that one license. That was not what they intended, and we want to work to correct that. In addition, the special events dispenser or special events distillery license that the OLCC issues, right now there is, by rule, a 31-day limit. In other words, nobody can get one for more than 31 days. Well, there is a total. The problem is that the OLCC has a rule pending where that limit is taken off. You could have it 365 days a year. So, and that's not what was intended by the distillers, to have something that was basically a roving liquor store 365. So we need to tighten down some of the language in the bill. There is an issue about restricting it to simply Oregon, but if you do it the way we're talking about and what the distillers want to do, I think you avoid that issue totally. So we would ask for 1 week to craft something and bring it back to you next, hopefully next Wednesday. And it'll be a nice love fest instead of a battle.
That looks like pretty love fest to me. Any questions? Yeah, Senator Wright.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I think that's a great idea to give them a week to iron out the problems. I see a couple or three problems in there, and you and I have talked about that, Paul, and so I'm hoping that we can solve those.
Thank you.
Sure.
We will.
Any other comments? Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 2567?
Yes, please.
Mr. Coba.
Good afternoon, Chair Gerard, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Coba. I'm representing the Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon, trade association of all the liquor stores. We are too concerned about unintended consequences in this bill. Look forward to being part of the conversation. So I'll keep in mind that the Washington model, which has happened, the changes up there have been, you know, very detrimental to the small craft distilleries and, you know, getting shelf space and doing that sort of a deal. We've been hand in glove working with the small distillers in Oregon, making them successful, helping us be successful. And we look forward to that partnership going forward. Thank you.
Any questions for Marshall? Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to close a hearing on 2567, and we're going to open a hearing on 3104.
Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, House Bill 3104A authorizes rural ports to acquire and operate telecommunications and infrastructure facilities. There are no amendments. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Hey, I move something. Kenny, would you like to go ahead and start?
I'd be more than happy to. Vice Chair Gerard, members of the committee, my name is Kati McEwen. I represent House District 9 down on the South Coast, and I'm pleased today to be before you speaking about House Bill 3104. What this bill does is simply add the word telecommunication to the forms of infrastructure that our ports can facilitate. I believe the fact that telecommunication isn't already included in the ORS 777 statutes is likely due to the fact that it didn't exist when the rules were written. And this addition simply reflects an update to accommodate 21st century infrastructure. The bill includes clarifications that the ports will not be the end users, that they are not going into the telecommunications business, and that they are precluded from invoking eminent domain. Representatives from the telecommunications industry have worked with ports to ensure that this bill allows for economic opportunities without inadvertently giving ports power of condemnation over existing telecom providers. So this truly was a collaboration. It started out as a very small bill. We ended up with some negotiations that I think made the bill better, and we're happy to have it for before you today. All of the interested parties have worked very hard together on the language and are in support of the bill. I want to thank you for your time today. With that, I will turn the dais over to Mr. Forsyth. Bob is the director of the Port of Siuslaw, from which this legislation came, and I'm pleased to stay and answer any questions that you might have regarding this bill as we move forward. It's a simple bill. It allows ports to add to the things that they're already doing in the area of economic development, which have to do with infrastructure in particular. I mean, they're already working in the area of infrastructure investment with seawalls and jetties and piers and warehouses and elevators and facilities for processing agricultural products. They already process fish and meat projects, oil tanks, ferries, bridges, subways, power plants, power transmission lines, fishing terminals, transportation of freight and handling of passenger traffic. So what this does is just add one more word to a long list of things that ports are able to do now. And I will let Director Forsyth tell you a little bit about what's going on down in Florence.
Please.
Thank you so much.
My name is Robert Forsyth. I'm the manager of the Port of Siuslaw in Florence, Oregon. Thank you, Vice Chair Gerard, for this time to speak. Working with Representative McEwen's office, we've put together this issue or this request because the rural ports on the coast of Oregon struggle on a daily basis, try to reinvent themselves from what 100 years ago they were simply resource extraction areas for fishing and logging and that sort of thing. And, you know, fast forward 100 years and all of a sudden we're looking for ways to continue to be a economic driver to our communities. Those days of commercial fishing for the bulk of us are gone. So now it's recreational fishing, tourism. And to become a continued economic driver in our community, we need to look for those possibilities of economics coming to us. And one of those is that a lot of the possibilities of the future are for major corporations to bring high-speed fiber to the coast and then from the coast to the I-5 corridor, giving a lot of the local ports that opportunity, because most of us have those corridors headed in there. And we need the ability to work with these companies and to help them get that high-speed fiber off of the ocean and into the I-5 corridor where the bulk of the populace is. And so this is just another tool to try to do that sort of thing and continue to help build our communities that struggle for that change in technology and reinventing what we do for a living. And so that's what we're here doing, and that's we really thank Katty and her group for helping us through this, and thank you for your attention today.
Okay. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Bell? This isn't the House. We're very efficient.
You are. We're very grateful.
I'm going to close the hearing on 3104, and I'm going to open a work session on 3104A. The chair moves 3104, House Bill 3104A, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any opposition? So ordered, and I'll carry.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Sure.
Thank
you. Open a hearing on House Bill 3239. Rep. Clem. Well, first let James give us a summary here.
Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, House Bill 3239 expands the definition of lender for purposes of beginning and expanding farmer loan program to include anyone selling agricultural land to a beginning farmer, an institution organized under the Federal Farm Credit Act, and any other person or entity defined by the Oregon Business Development Department through administrative rule. Declares emergency, effective on passage. There are no amendments. There is no revenue impact and has a minimal fiscal impact.
Rep. Clem, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21, which is here in Salem. And I don't think this bill actually came out of my committee, but I'm a sponsor of it, I think. Some of you might remember from last session a bill we passed creating a program for first-time farmers to borrow from banks lenders who want to participate in a program called Aggie Bonds. It's a federal program that a state has to opt into, and we opted into it. One thing we missed, and this is kind of the cleanup bill, is defining the lenders who could do it. We missed the Northwest Farm Credit Services, which is a big agricultural lender, but just the way it was structured didn't include them. So this is to add them in as somebody, and they're very likely somebody who would be doing this kind of lending, so to add them in. The other one is owner-financed agreements, and Senator Thompson would probably be familiar with things like this. There was a time when I was first married my wife and wasn't totally sure we're going to be involved in the family orchard or need to go buy one of our own, and I went and visited with this was Charlie Akiyama, and he was selling his, and he wanted to carry the note. There was no cash, no nothing. I'll sell it, but I want to carry the note. So this would make folks who are selling their farms and they want to carry, it's an owner financed arrangement, eligible as well. And that's, I think, basically the bill. The goal, obviously, here is to help people either expand or get into agriculture. And it's not state money. These aren't state loans. These are private lenders. It's just taking advantage of a federal program that gives more beneficial lending rates from these lenders. And we just want to get as many lenders in as reasonable.
Okay. Please identify yourself. We're kind of at a loss up here who's at the table.
Thank you, Chair Girod, members of the committee. For the record, Ivan Molesky with Friends of Family Farmers. Representative Clem gave a very nice introduction of the bill. I'd like to thank him as well as our bipartisan list of co-sponsors for this legislation. As was mentioned, the legislature created the Aggie Bounce program back in 2013 and to opt into this federal tax benefit for lenders who make loans to qualifying beginning farmers. We discovered a problem as we were trying to implement the bill that the definition of lender wasn't as broad as we had initially intended. We had intended back in 2013 to include Northwest Farm Credit Services, but because they're sort of a special entity, it was determined that they were not actually covered. So we worked very closely with Northwest Farm Credit Services and Business Oregon to get the definition right in this bill. We also added the owner finance contracts as an opportunity as well, so that essentially you can get a federal tax credit on the interest earned on loans to these qualifying beginning and expanding small farmers. John McCauley from Northwest Farm Credit Services could not be here today, but I would refer you to their testimony and support during the House Business and Labor Committee process. And I think I'll leave it there, but I'd be happy to answer any questions. I will just sort of give one last little comment, which is the importance of this program. The average age of Oregon farmers is just about 60 years old right now. Transitioning, helping folks who are younger than that get into farming is a big issue nationally and in the state here. That's exactly what this program is intended to address, and so we urge your support. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm just going to let me finish up the panel here. Sure. Is that, Joel, go ahead.
Chair Girod, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. Our membership, we have developed an agriculture task force that looked at a number of things, the Aggie Bonds program being one of them. Agriculture is really the backbone of Oregon's economy, certainly, especially in rural Oregon. I might actually be a little bit of an exception to that. It's a very little known fact that I, in fact, grew up on a farm in North Portland. Representative Clem has been there. It's very small. Passing out photographic proof of that farm. My little brother David Fisher is pictured there. Wasn't very successful. At the height of it, we had about 10 ducks, 10 chickens, 3 pygmy goats. So in the spirit of levity, I'm giving you all that. In all seriousness, though, this is a great bill. We think it'll help, sort of that transition as older farmers are retiring in Oregon. It is not guaranteed that we continue to be a leader in agriculture unless we're able to make opportunities for farmers to continue farming and to start new farms.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rep. Thompson?
Ivan, is this the bill we passed, 2700 in 2013, is that up and running? Have you had any successes so far? What do you know about how that's working?
Chair Girod, Senator Thompson, I know Business Oregon's
I should ask you ahead of time. Sorry.
The program is sort of under development, and part of why we want to make this change now is because the primary lender that expressed interest in engaging was Northwest Farm Credit Services, and once it was determined that they were not an eligible lender, that really put a crimp on the ability to move forward. They actually are very involved in the program in Washington State. I understand Business Oregon has had a lot of interest from folks in Oregon for this, but because it's a new program, it took a little time for the rule making to occur, and because Farm Credit Services was not included, we really don't have any results to show per se. I think we are going to see, the Washington program took a few years to get up and moving as well. So I think we're kind of in that time frame. We're not lending state money. We are essentially facilitating a federal tax benefit for folks who engage in this. So we're very hopeful that if we make this change, we're going to start to see some progress on the ground.
Thanks.
And Mr. Chair, if I might.
Sure.
One of the things you might remember, Senator, is I don't know if you do or not, but we heard in the original program hearings that a lot of lenders who weren't familiar with agricultural lending, they just don't really want to touch it. Part of the problem is if you have the definition exclude inadvertently the biggest farm lender, you're left with the ones who already are nervous about it anyway.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of young growers come in and say, look, they said, if you will sign something saying you will not use this home equity loan for farming, we'll give it to you. If you are going to try and farm with it, you cannot have this. And the people, if I remember right, they just lied and said, we're not going to, and then they did it. And it's because people in lending just don't know how to analyze whether a farm's going to make it or not, whether their crop type is hot in the market or not, whether they're going to sell it at farmers markets or through a co-op. They just don't know. And these guys do, but they're not in the program. Yeah. So I think the rules took a while to get going, and then the kind of lenders who are most nervous about it are the ones only ones eligible for it. So we get these folks. Plus, you get growers who want to finance their own, and they have a pretty good sense of what we'll make and what not. I think you'll expand the pool to where you'll get some takers.
Okay. Any more questions for this panel? Senator Monroe.
Some of us on this committee don't think 60 is particularly old.
No comment.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ivo, you want to come forward? Anybody else want to testify on House Bill 3239? Please take a seat.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ivo Trummer with the Oregon Business Development Department of Business Oregon for short. Agribonds is our program. I think the previous testimony captured correctly. It took a while to get the rules done. The one particular lender, and I want to stress that again, that really has interest and experience doing that kind of lending, Northwest Farm Credit Services. They are a quasi-federal entity, and it was it took a number of lawyers in one room and a long afternoon at Legislative Council to actually make sure that they will be captured in what we consider as a technical fix in this bill. So going forward, we look forward to working with them and making this a successful program.
Okay. Any questions for Ivo? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3239. And Senator Thompson, I need you back at the podium if you want to vote.
Get back.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3239. Chair moves House Bill 3239 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. Senator Thompson, you want to carry on the floor?
Absolutely.
Senator Thompson will carry. I'm going to close the hearing on, or the work session on House Bill 3239, and I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 2261. James.
Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, House Bill 2261A permits persons to provide proof of vehicle registration under certain circumstances in order to avoid the charge of a illegal display of a vehicle registration plate or improper display of vehicle registration plate validating stickers. Directs the court to dismiss the charge if the person charged delivers proof of registration at the time the violation was committed. There are no amendments, there is no revenue impact, and has a minimal fiscal impact.
Amy, do you want to...
Chair Girard, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation with a very simple bill, 2261. This comes to you really from the Task Force on Customer Service at DMV, which was created by the 2014 legislature. That task force put together a set of 11 recommendations, and one of them was this. This is the idea that if a person renews their vehicle registration online typically and has not yet received their tags, that if they're pulled over, they can use that proof of their vehicle registration renewal to the officer to demonstrate that they have renewed the registration, and that will count basically in lieu of the tags. The idea here is that DMV is trying to encourage people to do the one main transaction they can currently do online, that's renew their tags, encourage them to do that online instead of at the field office. And what we've found through surveys is that many people wait until next to the last day, or even after it's expired, and then in a rush, they run down to the field office so they can pay their money, get their tags immediately, and put them on the car. So the idea is if you can do it online and use that paper receipt to prove to the officer you've renewed your tags, it will encourage people to stay at home, renew your tags online, and keep a few people out of the field office. That's what the bill does. I do want to make clear on the record What this does not do, it does not give people a grace period to delay renewing their tags. If you get pulled over and you haven't renewed yet, this does not help you. It's not a grace period. It's simply a proof that you already have registered. And that is all I have.
Senator Monroe.
However, if you did like I did one time a few years ago, and you renewed your tags and put them in your glove compartment and got pulled over, the police officer was very nice. I showed him the tags, and he said, well, put them on.
Glad to hear it, Senator.
Any more questions for Amy? Pretty simple bill, guys.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2261A? I close the hearing on House Bill 2261A and open a work session on House Bill 2261A. The chair moves House Bill 2261A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any opposition?
I'd like to carry this one.
Seeing none, the bill is referred to the floor with a due pass. Senator Monroe will carry. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 2261A and open a public hearing on House Bill 2281A. James?
Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, House Bill 2281 makes issuance of fuel tax exemption emblems under the Road Usage Charge Program optional, deletes requirement that mileage of vehicles participating in Road Usage Charge Program be rounded up to the next whole mile. We do have a dash A2 amendment. It removes exemption for a specified vehicle with a maximum speed of 35 miles per hour for off-road use and that are operated on public highways and in any one calendar year a number of miles that does not exceed 15% of the total number of miles of vehicles operated for that calendar year. We are still awaiting a fiscal and revenue statement for the A2 amendment.
Okay. Which one of you wishes to start off? Clyde, go for it.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Girod and members of the committee, for the record, Clyde Psyche from the Oregon Department of Transportation. And with me today is Maureen Bach, who is the Road User Charge Business Implementation Manager.
That's quite a title.
So we're here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2281A. The bill contains two technical fixes to legislation passed in 2013 under Senate Bill 810 that established the Road User Charge Program. And the fixes will make the program easier to implement without altering legislative intent. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Bach, and she'll talk about the two fixes.
Ms. Bach.
Chair Girod, members of the committee, I'm Maureen Bach, and I'm, as Clyde said, I have this title longer than I am tall. The first fix actually addresses the requirement that we issue emblems for use fuel vehicles, which are typically diesel vehicles. This would actually eliminate something that could potentially be confusing for people who sell diesel and have to collect information about their untaxed sales. And then the second fix actually removes the requirement that the account managers round up the mileage to the next whole mile, so that actually the tax that people pay under the road usage charge is more accurate. And so that's the other fix that we're requesting.
Okay. Any questions for this panel? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more testimony for House Bill 2281A? Bob.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I would like to speak to the Dash 2 amendment,
okay,
which is unrelated to the underlying bill. What the Dash 2 amendment does is it removes an exemption that currently exists in the motor carrier or the trucking regulations. And James read that language. It's nobody can figure out why it was there in the first place. It's been there for decades. And what happened is the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration did an audit of ODOT. And they said that some of their laws were inconsistent with the federal regulations, and this was one of them. And if we don't fix it, and then it could jeopardize ODOT's federal funds. So it's It's purely technical. Nobody knows where the exemption came from in the first place. It could go back to 1935. It's just an ancient piece of law. Doesn't appear to have any application today, and the feds say it doesn't work for them, and they're going to withhold money if we don't fix it.
Okay.
So it's pretty simple.
Sounds simple. Any questions for Bob? Yep, thank you so much. Any more testimony for House Bill 2281A? Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2281A, and colleagues, we're not going to move this for a little while. We're going to leave this for there's some things that we might want to do with this bill. So any comments for the good of the order? Okay, I'm going to adjourn or close the meeting today. Thank you. Close the meeting today. Thank you. Adjourn.